Welcome to Lady Business Plus. I'm Renee and I'm here with Rose, and we're here to cry over Teen Wolf.
And shout. I promise I'll do a lot of shouting.
And crying.
And mostly, yeah, shouting and crying. I can do both at the same time, though. Like, that's a skill I've got.
So before we started, Sam messaged me. We were talking about how we felt about the series. And he linked me to Wikipedia, and I decided that this is how we're going to rate our feelings about this season of Teen Wolf. The pain scale.
I'm excited.
0 for no pain, 7 up to 7 to 10 for severe pain.
The scale only goes to 10?
Yeah, right, that's what I said. I'm like, I'm gonna need at least a 15.
I was gonna say like 47 usually is how I feel at the end. Like 47 being like your entire body's being flayed or, you know, something like that. That's kind of how Teen Wolf makes me feel.
Peter Hale just scratched your face out with his claws.
Right? Peter Hale just existed on screen. God.
We love Peter.
Alright, I actually do love Peter.
We
but
love
not,
to hate Peter.
But not the way that some people love Peter, in which they think he's like a puppy. I love Peter because he's actually turned into like a really interesting and well-written villain, so. But yeah, if we're going to talk about how much emotional pain Teen Wolf causes me, it's like a lot. It's pretty much, like, it's basically, it's my favorite show, but I don't know why. It's very, very hurtful to me. It's my abusive boyfriend show.
I can't tell you why I'm still watching this show, because you do. Because you came up to me one night and said, hey, Renee, there's a show that you should watch all 12 episodes for. And I did.
And that was the best decision we've ever made, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, that's true. It was a pretty good decision. But
I watched that first season I watched twice in 48 hours with you. It was great.
And I just keep paying and paying and paying for it.
Yeah, yeah.
With my heart and my soul. This stupid fucking show. These awful
it's
goddamn
really
writers.
Awful. Oh my god. Like, season 3, or, you know, the first half of season 3 is actually better than season 2. Like, season 2 was, like, a nosedive into how crappy the writing could get.
Half-naked lizard man. Mountain Ash! Sorry! I can't get over that line. It's so great. That's, like, the pinnacle. Like, Teen Wolf will never surpass that. I mean, Deucalion gave it a try this season. But
he was kind of a drama queen, yeah.
You're no Gerard there, Deucalion, but nice try. I give it a 5.5.
Okay, but I would argue that Peter Hale at the end of the season may be equivalent levels of drama. I guess it should go without saying every time we do these podcasts that this is going to be entirely full of spoilers.
I'm so mad about the season. I'm so angry. It's not a good. That's my default mode with Teen Wolf. I love it. Yeah. I love it. I'm so pissed.
Yeah. Well, and like, I was expecting to be a lot more angry with the finale. I was sure they were going to drag it out into some kind of like life or death, and then that's the end of the season, you know, situation. But they actually wrapped up their storylines, which I thought was really strange.
I thought it was dumb, and I'm not sure why they did it
way. I don't know. And then I keep going back and forth because it has Derek leaving at the end, and I'm like, all right, I'm not too concerned about that because I haven't heard anything about Tyler Hoechlin leaving the show. But then I keep going, but what if somehow they manage trickery and they're getting rid of Derek? And then I cry a little bit.
And then I quit the show and I'm like, well, I'm done.
No, basically, if Derek or Styles leaves, I don't think I can keep going.
No, I'm really there.
No matter how much I love the rest of the cast, Styles is what got me into the show, and I can't handle life without him.
I don't know. I probably wouldn't quit. I would just be like, ah, I'll wait for the DVDs.
Right. It would not be a pressing thing
where we watch it every week and torture ourselves.
Every week. sob every, yeah.
The show is agony.
It's really, it's funny because I talk to Paris about it and I, you know, spoil her and whatever's happening because she doesn't watch it. And she keeps being like, wait, and you think I should watch this show? And I'm like, no, actually don't ever start watching it. It's the worst idea you could ever have.
If you've managed to escape it by this point, don't dive in.
Yeah, it's hard because the writing is really inconsistent the last couple of seasons. Season 2 and 3 have just been really, really awkward in places, and the characterization's been like up and down. And because season 1 was legitimately, like, I used to tease people when I would force them to watch it by saying it's just about the eye candy, you know, like it's just Tyler Hoechlin and Tyler Posey with their shirts off all the time. It's perfect. You don't even have to worry about it. But it was legitimately, it was a well-written season and, you know, like a good story arc and all of that.
They left enough at the end of that season to be able to follow up the next season, which I find that these two, the like season 2 and season 3, haven't done the first half of season 3, I guess. I don't understand why the next part isn't just season 4. I will never,
right.
I don't get it.
But yeah, so the writing in season 2, just in the very first episode, like when you have Chris Argent assaulting Scott when he and Allison are making out in the car, and you're like, what the hell happened? Like, this doesn't even make sense based on the finale of season 1. It's completely incomprehensible. And then, yeah, plus the whoever, like, they're paying their special effects guy too much or something, so they just have to cram in the stupidest effects ever. We're talking about Jackson and his lizardy face and all that ridiculousness.
I don't blame that guy for leaving.
No. No.
Why would you abstain after that?
Good call, buddy. Good call. I hope Green Arrow or whatever is nicer to you.
Me too. Well, he's friends with John Barrowman, so.
Right.
But he's moving up in the world. Congratulations to him.
A+.
So, season 3, what are your top 3 episodes of the season? Do you even have a top 3? Can you even make?
I don't. Let's see. The Haunted Motel 1 is, like, far and away the best episode of the entire season. I don't know the name of it.
Motel California.
Right, Motel California. That was a really good episode. It was really well-written, standalone, good episode. I agree with your assessment that The Girl Who Knew Too Much is also a really good episode. I actually kind of like the hospital episode when they finally have that confrontation with Jennifer Blake when they're dragging her around. Some of it was really stupid, but there was also some of it that I really liked. So, I don't know. It's really hard to pick because, like, I could pick my least favorite episodes better, I think.
No, I'm sure we'll talk about that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think we differ because, like, I would do it, like, Motel California, The Girl Who Knew Too Much, and then Tattoo, which was the season premiere. Which wasn't great, but, like,
yeah.
I really liked how the series reframed Scott in the first episode. He was a super awesome character. I love Scott. He's,
yeah.
After Styles, I think Scott is my favorite character. And Tattoo just was like, you're such an adorable teenager, Scott.
Yeah.
Scott McCall, like, you and your tattoo, and it doesn't really have a meaning, and asking people for advice about your werewolf tattoo.
I think that my understanding about the tattoo is that Tyler Posey got the tattoo and then the show had to, like, work around it because he didn't tell anybody or ask permission.
Good job. Good job, Tyler
Posey.
That was a good show. That was a good life choice. I approve.
Right. So,
if I wanted to see Derek whip out the flame, like,
the blowtorch. Yeah. I don't know. I have mixed feelings about that one, because I thought some bits of it were good. Like you said, the development of Scott and, like, showing the sort of changes that he's gone through in over the summer. But I also, like, whatever, having Styles be randomly, like, so freaked out by needles that he passes out or whatever. That seemed really, just, like, for the sake of making a joke, and he's my favorite character, so it's kind of like...
Don't pick on your favorite characters. I know this rule. Apparently Jeff Davis doesn't know this rule.
No, because he writes the Derek Hill Man Pain Hour every week.
I don't know why Tyler Hoechlin has sold the show. They hate his character.
They're really awful, yeah. Which is too bad. Like, I know a lot of people... Or I don't know a lot of people. I know some people that don't like Derek at all. And I think he's actually a really great character. And it's just randomly has stupid shit happen to him all the time.
His life is full of pain and suffering and nothing good ever happens to him. And even when good stuff does happen to him, it's actually secretly terrible.
It's actually terrible. How proud of myself was I for calling it on the villain of the season?
Congratulations. I hadn't even gone there until you said something, and then I was still like, no, no way. They wouldn't be that unsubtle. No, they would totally be that unsubtle. It's
totally
freaking Teen Wolf.
There's not a subtle thing about that show. Well, that's not true. Only when they leave things out entirely. I'm thinking of season two, like Scott's random like stroke of genius and poisoning Gerard, you know?
Yeah, they did not.
Like, they didn't telegraph that at all.
No, it just came out of nowhere. It was like a last-minute addition. How do we redeem this character?
He's being kind of a stupid shit all season. Well, let's fix that.
And they didn't address his like betrayal of Derek at all.
No.
I don't know. The writing on the show just really infuriates me. Which will lead just wonderfully into the episodes that we hated utterly. And one set on fire.
Oh, motherfucking flashbacks.
Flashbacks.
Mad about that episode. It was just like it served one purpose, which is to show us that Peter Hale has always been a sociopath. And I appreciated that because I was like getting a little too comfortable with Sassy Peter and was not feeling good about that. And they were like, surprise, he's always been a total manipulative douche. And I was like, yes, perfect.
The episode we're talking about is Visionary, right?
Yeah.
And it was just, this is not how you film an episode of television. I'm not even a television writer or director, and I know that the flashback episode like this is a terrible idea. It was just clunky and garbage.
They used so many flashbacks in the series that were just like really, really shoddily done, you know, when they start that one episode with, I can't believe Derek's dead. I'm like, I can't either, because
he's not.
I've heard about it if, you know, somebody decided to kill off Derek. You know, and so it was just like, it wasn't even an interesting, like, place to start, because the premise is already ridiculous. So I'm like,
what would have been, 300% more effective is if they had... Oh, I guess open with the flashback of that happening,
mm-hmm.
and then not said anything about Derek. Like, let it happen, and then not said anything.
Yeah.
Maybe. That would have fixed it a little. Or they could have just rewritten the whole episode to be better.
Or they could have not had it take place in flashback, and then it would have been better. But yeah, so Visionary, the flashback with Paige, it was just useless. Like, it didn't develop Derek's character. Like, it gave a little bit of the backstory. And I will say, like, I thought the concept of having this, like, whatever cyclical revenge thing where everything is tied together, like, I did think that was interesting. I thought they handled it super crap, but I like that the events of the past are affecting the future, you know, like, that kind of thing. And so the things that happened with the Hale Pack and, you know, the people who would eventually become the Alpha Pack, you know, like, I like that that was all relevant to what was happening, you know, in the present time. And but it was just like, it was so sloppily put together. Here's this big exposition episode where we're gonna tell you what happened instead of leaving subtle things that you can put together yourself. Basically, we were treated like we were infants by the narrative.
Somebody on Twitter, and I don't know who it was now, actually came and said that every time something happens in the show and we think, like, we find something subtle about it that is interesting,
mm-hmm.
or whatever, it's not actually the show being subtle, it's just the show forgetting shit.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. I would definitely agree with that assessment.
Like, I saw a theory somewhere on Tumblr, as per usual, I don't know where,
right.
In the last episode...
We don't source things.
No, I never source things. What are you talking about? It's Tumblr. You can't find Sorry anything on Tumblr. And Lunar Eclipse, which is the last episode, because it was so terribly written and everything stacked together so imprecisely and messily. Mm-hmm. They didn't have anything for all these freaking characters to do, so Styles gets taken out in, like, the first act by hitting a tree.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And this person on Tumblr said, oh god, he hits the tree, and then we see him with the bloody forehead, and then we don't see him again until he just suddenly appears...
In the Nemeton.
In the Nemeton, and just jams a baseball bat, and then hold it up. What if he's a ghost? And, like, this is the kind of thing, like, that might be, like, a really interesting storyline, but they would never think of it, because they're completely 100% unsubtle with the writing. And that just kept cropping up. Like, I saw another theory, and I think maybe it was Gav, it might be in her recaps, where the only way that the visionary with Paige and Derek would, like, make sense is if it was Peter being an unreliable narrator, and it being, actually being Peter who killed Paige. Again, nothing that interesting or subtle going on here. It's just, they were just retconning Derek's backstory to make it more tragic, because he didn't already have enough tragedy as it was with Kate.
Right.
He, like, sexually abusing him.
Yeah, that's, we definitely need to make Derek a more tragic and awful character. I don't know. I'm actually really curious who Peter killed to make his eyes blue. Like, I wonder if it was Laura or if it was somebody else.
I guess we're going to find out, because he's our new villain.
Yeah.
I'm excited, actually.
I am really excited because they spent so much time being like, look at Peter Hale, the good guy. And then, you know, to the end with the, like, wah-ha-ha-ha, he was never good to begin with. And I was like, I knew it. ha-ha, my feelings were correct. I'm so proud of myself always when that happens. But I think that he'll... Well, all right. I can't say for sure, because they do like to throw the monkey wrench in our business. But I think he'll be a particularly interesting villain, you know, this time around. Like, I liked him as a villain in the first season, too.
Even though he, like, obviously he was, like, kind of cardboard cutout in the first season?
Yeah, no, we didn't get a lot of who Peter Hale is as a person.
But now we have all the details. Not pretty.
Although I really would like a villain that, like, their story arc wasn't centered on revenge. Literally, except for Kate, every single villain that we've had it's all been about revenge. I mean, like, three seasons, we don't need any more.
We've had all the vengeance is done, Jeff Davis. It's time to move on to something else. Somebody can just be a bad guy. Like, maybe he just wants to take over the world. That's fine. Yep. Maybe he wants to be Supernatural King of Beacon Hills.
Well, Peter mostly just wants to kill Scott and get the alpha powers, I think. Maybe it'll be nice and straightforward.
Well, we've hoped for that before, and now look where we are.
Yeah, it's true. There are some things that it does very, very well. Like, familial relations and, like, really deep friendships. They write incredibly well. Romance, they write incredibly badly. Like, the worst romance I've ever seen. It's like, embarrassing how bad.
They're teenagers. What do you want from them?
Well, but not even the teenagers. Like, Derek's weird infatuation with Jennifer Blake.
No, that does not count as romance. That was a complete misdirection.
It was intended to be romance.
Yeah, but it was gross.
It was gross. It was
gross from the very beginning. And I was like, what are you doing? This is terrible. This is terrible writing. Yeah. This is terrible characterization. Just stop.
Yeah.
The only romance on the show that I actually like is Scott and Allison, because I think it's just, like they're so, like, it's just screwed up enough to make me, like, go, oh, okay, that makes sense as a teenage relationship. And plus, I like it because Allison and Scott didn't get back together this season.
And yeah, no, I thought that was kind of nice.
And it's very obvious that they're setting Isaac and Allison up to get together next season. It's really refreshing how Scott doesn't react like an entitled man-child. He's obviously disappointed, and you can tell, but he doesn't, like, stand in her way, he doesn't get jealous, and I thought that was really interesting, especially in the last scene, and where Scott walks into the school, and you see them, Allison and Isaac walking down the stairs,
right,
and you just see
chatting.
He's just sort of accepted it. But I really like that scene anyway, because of the way it, like, frames, like, romance, because you see and compares it to Deep Friendship, because you see Allison and Isaac, but then, like, the very last thing is Scott and Stiles, which is how...
Right.
All the... Like, it's how the second season ended, too, which I... Please end every single season with Scott and Stiles being bros. The end.
I think that's a good idea. That works for me. I find Scott to be one of the most believably childish teenage characters I've ever seen on television, because he's very self-centered, you know, at times, and even when he's sort of trying to do the right thing, it's all sort of based around his own sense of entitlement as a, you know, teenager. You know, it's like in season one when Stiles is trying to be like, hey, we got to get this stuff, we got to learn this stuff, and Scott's like, I just want to go to prom and be normal, you know. My life is so hard, you know, which, whatever, it's fair, but, you know, like, that's sort of how he treats it, you know, in season two, where he's like, oh, I hate Derek, he's the worst, Derek's awful, can't trust Derek, you know, and just being like, well, maybe you could have if you tried, but apparently we're not doing that, that's fine. Which, to be fair, Derek was awful in season two. He was the worst.
Yeah, he went all, like, power mad with, like, manipulating emotionally fragile teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
I still don't. Season 2 is just a mess.
It's really, really awful.
Yet I love it. Don't get me wrong. I'm still on SS Tumul sailing in the
sunset. Oh, no, it's true. It's true. Like, it's hard because I have a lot of criticism about the show.
No, really, a lot.
So much. But I love it. Like, I legitimately, it is my favorite show. And I'm not going to stop watching it unless they do something to, you know, the characters that I love best. And they haven't quite gotten me there. I mean, there's a lot of feelings about the characters I love best, but they haven't screwed it up irrevocably yet.
Well, they need to leave Derek alone. Derek has
they
fulfilled,
really do.
They have, he Which... has fulfilled his, like, whatever his role is to Scott, that's done, and, like, the last episode has him leaving for a while, so he's, like, totally available to just stay gone, or, like, come back as a character, just a regular character who's not gonna have any more terrible things happen to him, and also
Everything
he just needs to start dating dudes.
That he could start dating Stiles, actually, and that would be fine. I don't actually want that to be canon, though. Like, as
no,
soon as it becomes...
That's true.
Like,
I want them to be friends.
I know there's a subset of fandom that's all, like, mad that Stiles isn't coming out, but I'm like, I don't really need that. That's what I have fanfic for.
I want Stiles to be Scott's emissary.
That would be good. I wanted him to be Derek's emissary, too, but that's obviously not a direction we're going right now.
And I want Derek to teach him how. I want Stiles to be Scott's emissary, but I want Derek to teach him how.
I'm actually curious how they're going to integrate Derek back into the pack, like, when they come back for that.
I don't know. It seems kind of problematic because Derek is, like, the natural wolf, and Scott mm-hmm. is the one who, like, came into the wolf community. And yeah. I don't know how that dynamic would work, but I've never seen Derek as the way that he's characterized. I've never seen him as an alpha of a pack. Like, because when he does it, he just...
Yeah.
I don't really know.
He's a terrible leader.
Yeah, he really does not know how to lead people. And I don't know if that's the way they write his character, to be completely inept at, like, objective leadership. He made, like, from the very beginning, he made all the wrong decisions. And I think mm-hmm. that giving... healing his sister, who, by the way, had the worst storyline and backstory, or lack of backstory, in existence of any television show ever, was probably the best thing he's ever done for the werewolves
right.
in Beacon Hills.
There's a whole mess of stuff, whatever, speculative stuff, where you're like, well, the twins are still there, so there's three alphas in Beacon Hills? Sure, I guess that's gonna work, maybe. You know, and their whole attempt... I find it interesting when TV shows, like, redeem characters. And so they're obviously doing that with the Alpha Twins. They're like, they're still in school and still, you know, macking on their people that they were macking on. And it's fine.
No, it's not fine. They did nothing to earn their redemptions at all.
No, it's really nothing at all.
I'm seriously grossed out. I also don't understand why the Lydia and... Is it Aiden? I don't know. that's how bad a job
Alpha
they did.
Alpha Twin B.
Alpha Twin B is with Lydia, and Alpha Twin A is with Danny. I'm not as grossed out by Alpha Twin A and Danny, because he's like from the very beginning of the season, he's seemed more.
Yeah. Well, and he I think he actually genuinely has feelings for Danny, you know, and it was intended to read that way in the show. And particularly I'm thinking of in The Girl Who Knew Too Much when he tells Danny, you know, if anything happens, come find me first, basically implicitly saying so that I can protect you. And then also in Hotel California, when he is starting to freak out and is like, oh, I gotta disengage from this so I don't hurt you. Things like that.
And that didn't happen with Lydia and the other guy. Like, she just kept hooking, no. She just kept hooking up with him, and even though she knew who he was.
Right, was really that was a little weird.
I say that throughout the seasons, the most consistently written character has been Lydia.
Absolutely.
But this whole decision of hers just really this made no narrative sense to me. I don't know. Yeah. I don't. Yeah. Get it. It just feels like it was shoehorned in to he's part of the pack now because he's with Lydia, and you just need to accept it. But that's not a good reason.
Especially because in the finale, you have Alpha Twin A going to Lydia and everybody and being like, "I need you to help me stop my brother and Kali," and then all of a sudden. Alpha Twin B is like on their side, even though he was supposedly one of the ones who was going to be stopped.
And they both killed Boyd.
Yeah.
I don't get it, guys. That hasn't been addressed at all. Like, are we just killing people indiscriminately and just being like, yes. Oh, whoops, there was a really mean wolf threatening you. Like, no, it doesn't work that way. I don't understand why Aiden and Ethan. What was their motivation for being in the pack? Was it just power? Was it fear? I don't know. And that really bothers me because without knowing that motivation, I can't read Ethan in my head.
No, for sure. And there's a lot of characters like that in the show, though. For me, it's Allison. I still haven't figured out how to get over Allison's let's buy into Grandpa's theories meltdown in season 2. Arguably, she's done enough good in season 3 that I should be okay with it, given the way that I forgive some of the other characters who don't deserve it, but I'm still not over it.
Never gonna be over it. It's gonna be like season 6 and the show's gonna be over and you're like, well, I don't forgive Allison for anything.
She still sucks. Which is not, it's not true. Like, I don't think Allison sucks, but I also don't think that her, like, not really an apology to Isaac makes everything cool. But the show does that.
The show does that to everybody. And they drop these threads, and they shouldn't be dropping the threads. I don't know why they just continually invent these storylines that come at our characters externally when they have so much internal narrative to pull from that would be really, really interesting to explore. It's really frustrating.
It's like both of Peter Hale seeing both Melissa McCall and Lydia. And just being like, hey.
Hey, what's up?
And then being like, all right. Because I guess, you know, the point is that what they're dealing with situationally is too, whatever, frantic for them to actually address the emotional impact of dealing with Peter Hale. Because let's be honest, I'd rather take on the Alpha Pack than deal with Peter Hale.
We love Peter. We love
him. And yet I love him. And yet I love him. I don't know. It's really...
It's a complicated thing.
This show brings out so many confused emotions in me.
This is why Peter Hale is a good villain. Because we, like, we sympathize with him in some ways. We hate him in others. And we understand all his motivations. So he works really well. Whereas with Jennifer, she came out of nowhere. We don't... Like, we learn all her past through some terrible flashbacks.
Right. And we're just like spoon fed it. And it doesn't make her the problem that I have with Jennifer as a villain is that she talks about how she's doing the things that she does as a way to save people. And there's no place anywhere in the text of the show where she actually demonstrates that she gives a crap about anybody. Like, she's literally in it for the revenge. You know, she's like, "You ruined my face. And now I'm going to kill you, all of you."
The vanity thing. You cited the vanity thing before, which bugs you.
Oh, it drives me crazy. And we talked about, like, the damage that she sustained in the attack by Hully, just not equivalent to the way that she looks.
They just wanted to use a scary mask.
It's true.
You could probably justify it if you like looked at it and said, well, maybe every time she performs this magic, she like makes her true self uglier. But the show never addresses it that way. They just be like, oh, scary Duroc, and I'm like, no.
Yeah. And so it bothers me because they went to that like sort of Freddy Krueger horror mask face, you know, with her. But it wasn't necessary. Even if it was about her vanity, it didn't have to be to that extent. Vanity is you know, kind of a fickle thing. It doesn't have to be a huge blemish in order to have it be something that's like, somebody did this to me and it's awful.
Why be subtle when you can punch your viewers in the face with it? That's what I think every time they sit down to run an episode, that's what they ask. How can we put all the information into like a bomb and like fire it at our viewers and then make them explode?
There's a lot of different ways that they manage that. And I do, like, that's why I was saying, like, I think Peter Hale is maybe one of the most well thought out villains because he's subtle. You know, he wasn't subtle in season one, perhaps, once they figured out what he was doing. But, you know, he was like, this is about revenge. I'm not making any bones about it. All I want to do is kill the people who killed my family. You know, and I think that that's really something about Peter. It's like, family is very important to him. If you think about the fact that he manipulated Derek into losing the alpha stuff, whatever power, if you want to call it that. So he manipulated Derek into trading his alpha powers.
I think we should call it alpha sparkles.
Alpha sparkles, yes. So Derek lost the alpha sparkle in exchange for healing Korra. But Peter positioned him to do that. This is me speculating. So that Peter doesn't have to kill Derek in order to become an alpha. So he's avoiding conflict within his family. You know, he tries to get Derek and Korra out of the line of fire, which it doesn't work because Derek is nothing if not foolhardy and brave. But
did you see when Lydia yelled in the very last episode how Derek like turned around and just came right back?
Oh, it was so good. I was really proud of him there. He was like, oh, that's Lydia. We have to go back. And I was like, oh, Derek,
that's so
caring about Lydia. That's the best.
Although somebody somewhere, maybe it was I need to just start like favoriting everything my Twitter my Twitter or Tom Murphy says about the show. I was like,
no.
They were like, did they just use Lydia as a dog whistle?
I mean, technically.
And I was like, well, maybe. That's awkward.
But yeah, and then you have, if we're going to go back to talking about villains, Gerard's revenge arc, which was very tedious. And Gerard was the more like obvious sociopath that we've had. You know, he's like, I'm crazy. I'm totally crazy. You killed my daughter and I'm crazy. You know, that was Gerard. It wasn't subtle. It was just like crazy, you know, and they tried to throw in like a little bit of monkey wrench at the end where he was like, also, I want to be a werewolf so I don't die. And I'm crazy.
Oh, Gerard. Oh, Christ. Stop and laugh.
I hated him so much. Oh, I think he was actually my least favorite. Mostly because Jennifer actually, you know, is the one who kidnapped everybody, actually threatened their lives. But, you know, he threatened Scott through his mom, and I think that's really awful. Oh, I have so many feelings about the families in this show.
Oh, gosh.
Anytime you threaten somebody through their family, that's just the lowest you can go, I think.
And that happens to poor Scott a lot.
It happened
in season one. It happened in season two.
And in season three.
And
for Scott in particular, being, you know, in a single parent household where, you know, whatever, we just recently learned about his dad, who's different than I was expecting, but obviously they're not happy as a, you know, as a family. So
no, the end of Lunar Eclipse, where he goes to knock on Scott's door and Scott opens it and then shuts it and then down the hall, Melissa's like laughing.
Smirking. Yeah, that was beautiful.
I was like, that's so great.
It makes me think of in season one when they have the parent-teacher conferences and Harris is being a total dick and talking about how Scott doesn't have like a good male influence on him or whatever, and that's why he's doing the things that he's doing. And Melissa's like, yeah, we don't need that. That was, we're better off without it. And I was like, you go, girl. It can't be easy to raise a teenager by yourself.
And can we talk about how she's raised her teenager?
Mm-hmm.
Because Scott is a character. Out of all the things that they did with all the other characters, Scott's arc as the true alpha, whatever,
mm-hmm.
was like one of my favorite things. Like the thing that threaded through the whole season really well. Like I've seen a lot of people that don't like this whole, oh, he's a chosen one or whatever, but mm-hmm. I don't really think it's the same type of story as that. Like, he didn't get chosen. He got bitten without consent in this mm-hmm. first season, and ever mm-hmm. since then, he's been either trying to get rid of it. So we've seen him try, like, we've seen him, it's happened to him, and then he's, like, kind of tried to reject it because he never asked for it. And now he's, like, picked it up and adopted it, and he's learned, he's tried to learn the culture, and he's tried to, integrate himself and into, like, this community with all these people who need to be protected. Mm-hmm. And so he, it's not so much that he's chosen, it's that he becomes an alpha because he worked for it and made the right decisions. He came to it because he wanted to protect people. Like, even people who have been, like, cruel to him.
You definitely get the sense in season three that Scott has come to terms with being a werewolf. Season one was all about how he didn't want it. It was awful. It was ruining his life. He wasn't interested in learning about it. He didn't want to be friends with Derek. He didn't want to do anything to take control of it. He just wanted it gone. And season two, you still get a little bit of that, like, reluctance, and especially in how it affected his relationship with Allison. You know, if only I wasn't a werewolf, then I could mack on my girlfriend all, you know, as much as I wanted. But in season three, he's definitely accepted that a werewolf is, you know, being a werewolf is part of his identity. While I don't particularly find Scott to be a good leader,
he's very new at it.
Yeah, I don't think it's a bad thing that he's going to be, you know, in that position. I think that it's going to be an interesting journey for everybody.
Well, he doesn't have a lot of ambition. Like, I mean, if you look at Peter, who obviously has ambition to just be like the strongest or whatever, Scott doesn't have that.
No. Well, and Scott's ambitions throughout the thing have been, I want to be on the lacrosse team and I want to have a girlfriend, and, you know,
he's a teenager. It's so great. I love
Scott. No, in a way, Scott's already, like, sort of met his like teenage ambitions and he's accomplished them. That's the way of showing his maturity, I guess, you know, to be like, here's my bucket list. I've already checked off half the things on it, you know. Even in the beginning of season, where you see him on the motorcycle instead of his bicycle, and Melissa complains about it, but she says, well, he earned it with his money. You know, like, he earned the money to make that happen. You know, so Scott's not an irresponsible person. You know, he's obviously a teenager, but he has a good sense of responsibility and, you know, of ethics and things like that. And so it's not, like, I think he's well-suited to the role that he's, you know, taking on, even if I don't think he's, like, good at it.
I think we're going to see how he acts as a leader mm-hmm. in season 3B. Season 3B sounds so stupid, wasn't it? Season 4. And how we'll see how he adapts. We'll see how he protects his pack. And I'm also really curious exactly how it's going to... Is it going to be because he's a true alpha and Aiden and Ethan are just regular alphas who got... I don't really understand the teen wolf werewolf mythos at all. I don't understand how it works. Like, there's like an alpha hierarchy now. You know, it's not mm-hmm. just alpha. So I'm wondering how that's going to work and how it's going to break down.
No, I actually am really curious about what the structure of his pack is going to be like, given whatever we have, two werewolves plus alphas. Because it's we have four, I guess technically four werewolves left in Beacon Hills. We're not counting Peter. Because it's Scott and Isaac, Aiden and Ethan maybe, and then various humans who could obviously Styles and Lydia and Allison, and maybe they'll finally let Danny in on some secrets. We'll see.
If he's dating a werewolf, maybe they should.
That would be nice of them.
Ready for Danny to have... He has been in the show since season one. It's time for Danny to have a bigger role in the show. I've been waiting. Dear show, come on.
So
I'm ready for them to stop adding, like, new characters. Because
and just, like, develop the ones that they've already got.
Yeah, but it's not happening, because I've already seen spoilers about new people in season 3B.
Good, I'm excited.
I'm not excited at all.
It'll be interesting to see how they sort of play that out, and if they're actually going to be like, all right, now Scott's the leader, let's listen to what he says, or if it's going to be a lot of, sure, Scott, we're totally going to listen to what you have to say, whatever.
I think everybody's going to start listening to Styles. Scott's going to make a pronouncement, everybody's going to look at Styles. Do you think this is a stupid idea? And Styles has to be like, okay, it's stupid, but we're going to do it. Or, it's stupid, we're not going to do it.
I find Styles and Scott's relationship very interesting, just because of how much Scott takes Styles for granted in various places in the series. You know, like, I think their friendship is very strong, but there's definitely places where you're like, do you not want to think about what you're doing to your best friend there, Scott? But like I said, realistically, he's a self-absorbed teenager, so regardless of my judgment on his personal choices, I think that it's usually makes sense within the context of what's happening, as much as anything makes sense within the context of Teen Wolf.
Nothing makes sense because the writers don't even remember what they've done two seasons before.
Do you want to talk about all of my Stilinski feelings? Because I have a lot of those.
We should talk about all your Stilinski feelings. We should.
I have so many feelings about the Stilinskis. Mostly, why can't you fucking give the sheriff a name?
Jeff, I know, Davis? Right? Stiles' dead mother has a name now.
I really, really want. And actually, you just need to name him John, because that's the only thing I'll accept anymore.
They could just use... I don't understand why they're doing that. Are they doing it because... Is it like a family thing where names to be secret and you only find out their name if they die? Because that's horrible.
Yeah, it might be. I'm not sure.
I'm so happy that Sheriff Stilinski knows.
Yes. Oh, thank God.
And then, of course, as soon as he finds out, they rip him away from Styles.
They immediately sideline him and make it so that he can't do anything about it.
So mad. And it stretched out over...
like 4 episodes.
It was a long time. I was just like, this is not resolved yet. They are still in that stupid hole. Deep breath, Renee. Yeah. Calm down. Don't throw your computer across the room.
I was so mad throughout all of that. And just Styles' relationship with his dad has been like such a source of trauma the last couple seasons. You know, like, they're obviously very close in season 1, and then season 2 has them like veering wildly off into distrust and, you know, antipathy and whatever, because Styles trying to keep this secret from his dad. It's a bad idea, Styles. He shouldn't have done it.
Well, when he tries to tell him the truth.
No, it's true.
And then, like, he takes Cora with him and, like, tells all these stories and then asks Cora to demonstrate, and then Cora passes out. So poor Styles, who tries to keep it a secret forever, and then when he tries to tell, is, like, rebuffed.
Every time they fight, it, like, literally hurts me in my heart, because it's so, like, pointed, you know? Like,
they know how to hurt each other, and it's awful.
Their fights are, like, it's, like, being stabbed.
Because they're so close that they know
exactly where to hit. Like when they've dropped Cora off in the hospital and Styles says, "Mom would have believed me." Oh my god, that was literally my heart on the floor being squashed into 1,000 tiny pieces.
Mm-hmm. I can cite every single instance of, like, them fighting or the episode, The Overlooked, with that whole episode where Styles is like, my dad. The Overlooked was a hard episode for me, because I'm just like, I can't, I don't think I'm going to be able to finish this episode, because I can't handle Dylan O'Brien's face right now.
And it's true, like, Dylan O'Brien acts the hell out of all of that.
He's not the best actor on the show.
Yeah. I love Dylan O'Brien. I love the Stilinskis, and I am so excited about the sheriff being in the werewolf know, so to speak.
Now he and Melissa McCall can, like, go on, like, coffee dates and talk about it, and then they can just end up dating, and then they can get married.
That would be all right.
I'll be okay with it.
Like I said earlier, the way that they show familial bonds in that show is just really, really tight. And even the breakdown of familial, you know, like Allison fighting with her dad. And again, like, it's very pointed. It's like, you know exactly where to hit, you know, when Allison is, like, accusing her dad of lying about things while he's researching what the Duroc is up to. And he's like, you want to talk about lying, you know? And you're like, oh, ouch. But true, but ouch, you know?
I find it interesting that we get Sheriff Zelinsky as compared to, who's a sheriff, just compared to Scott's dad who shows up. And the level of affection for the parents isn't, I mean, you notice it, and it's obviously there because it's a very strong emotional core of the show.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe you don't realize how strong it is until you see Stiles rip into this FBI guy.
Oh my god, yeah.
That was the most beautiful scene. I'm like, why are you talking like this to an FBI agent?
No, and my first impulse when Stiles is first mouthing off to him is, like, is this guy, like, family? Like, is he Stiles' uncle or something? Because that's usually where you'd go. So I was really, whatever, impressed and entertained when it ended up being Scott's dad. And
well,
like,
is his family? Yes, it is family, because,
you
Scott
know, essentially,
and Stiles,
yes,
are bros.
Essentially, yes. So, in a way, yes, it was his uncle. Both of them, you know, in the back and forth where Mr. McCall is making some really awful accusations about Stiles' dad and just drinking habits and whatever. Like, that was brutal and wrong.
I got the feeling during that scene he wasn't commenting on, like, recent events. He was commenting on when Stiles'
definitely
mother
when
died.
Claudia died.
And I'm like, that's really shitty, dude, because seriously, his wife died. Yeah. So maybe he fell into a bottle for a little while because his wife died. You know what's good behavior there? Emotional support.
Right. Yeah. So fuck you.
Oh god. I hated that guy from
scene. I still hate him. I'm looking forward to him being awful.
And that's where they're gonna go, because he's staying mm-hmm. in Beacon Hills to be, like, FBI. But, like you said earlier, that you would have been more interested if he stayed and wasn't really that, in, like, he wasn't really interested in redeeming his relationship with Scott. That would be
mm-hmm,
more interesting to
mm-hmm.
you.
Yeah.
And I don't know where I fall on the scale.
Yeah. Well, mostly just because I find it, whatever, a little bit trite and predictable. They're like, oh, deadbeat dad back. He's, like, gonna become friends with his son again. And you're like, no, that's not actually how that works. I mean, I have a parent that I'm estranged from, you know.
Yeah, like, no, I understand. I've been there. Sometimes you just stay estranged, and it just doesn't ever get better. I get why they're showing it that way, but I would find that way more interesting to show how Scott is so willing to get along with other people and compromise, that I would just really like to see him just shut down, because it feels...
And maybe they will. You know, they sort of implied that with the door slamming in his face. He's like, nope.
I'm just, come on, I'm dubious. And, you know, these fucking writers.
Oh, I know.
The show's the worst.
It's really bad.
Why do we watch this show?
Because the characters are really good.
Ah, you're right.
That's pretty much my only explanation for it, because, yeah, the writing in the episodes themselves is very, like, haphazard, and you get some really, really beautiful, great scenes, and followed by some, like, ridiculously shitty, cheesy scenes.
Or
some,
like, really great characters who are, like, rich and full of depth, and then you get Cora.
Right.
Who was obviously, like... rammed, it just felt like she was just ran into the role that Erica was supposed to have.
Right, you might as well have just left Erica there. Except whatever the actress's reasons were for leaving, but well, maybe because she was written like crap.
Yeah, well, if I was written like that, I would probably leave too.
I'm really mad about Erica.
Yeah.
Her death doesn't really matter to me as much, but so much as the way that she was introduced.
Well, I know I had a lot of friends who watched the show, and mm-hmm. on that episode where they introduced her, they make her over as slutty as possible.
Yeah.
And I'm like, there's no reason for that.
Mm-mm.
and because she could have looked that way even when she was sick. So yeah. Doing that, it's just really shitty. Like, it's really shitty behavior. Yeah. And yeah. Also, there was something, I mean, other people got really angry because it cured her disability, and that's not, you don't do that because it's really horrible. Because some people don't want their disabilities cured, and
yeah.
It's not good. But then again, I'm like, dude, you're watching a show that's premised on the fact.
Teenage werewolves.
About
yeah.
That the main character had asthma.
Right.
And you didn't quit over that.
No, it's true.
So, it's a little hypocritical. I'll probably get tons of hate mail now. Sorry.
It's all right. Well, no, it's true, but we get that sort of double standard in a lot of different places from fandom, you know, like we were talking about it earlier, and I'm not going to say some of the things that I was saying earlier, but I was very mad about the way that fandom deals with race and the fact that people forget when they're talking about race in Teen Wolf that Scott is Hispanic, he's Mexican. Tyler Posey has said that, and Jeff Davis has said that, and Scott is supposed to be Mexican. And so, like, when people leave that out when they're discussing race issues in Teen Wolf, it infuriates me so, so bad. So to me, the disability thing is just, like, another vein of that, where they're like, well, it only matters if it's a really visible disability. Like, it only matters if Boyd is the one who was killed because he had darker skin, but we don't need to pay attention to the fact that our main character is actually Mexican.
That was like 200% less polemic expletives this time. I'm impressed.
For you, my dear, it's all for you.
You love me.
But no, my biggest complaint with Erica was, in fact, that she had that ridiculous makeover, because if she was dealing with that kind of like psychological trauma of, you know, being harassed by her peers and things like that, even if her body was healed, she's not going to get over that trauma. You know, she's going to have like post-traumatic stress over her experiences. She's not going to want to put her body in the spotlight. And so that's what really annoyed me about the introduction of Erica.
Basically, you know, Derek just adopted a bunch of people who needed therapy. Maybe yeah. Because he was starting group therapy. Maybe he was trying to get a group therapy group together and talk about all their deep-seated emotional issues.
Well, and, you know, Derek sort of picked the people who were, you know,
emotionally
isolated.
Or bodily. He emotionally manipulated a lot of people who were, like, weak to, like, at weak points, especially weak bodily, like, especially Isaac, who was being abused, and Erica, who had epilepsy. He chose very specifically weak characters.
I really wish that they had shown his choices to be more thoughtful, because I like to think, because I'm a Derek apologist, that he did have good reasons for taking someone, you know, who's abused and be like, well, here's some power. Take back your power that has been sort of stolen from you by the people that are abusing you, for both Erica and Isaac. You know, like, to me, that's how I read that. But the show didn't portray it that way at all. You know, like I said, I'm a Derek apologist, so...
We're okay. No, it's fine. We are okay with you being that way. We love you for
it. I give him, you know, better motivations than the show does, because I love him, and I feel terrible for him.
At all times, because it's just gotten worse and worse. I don't understand what else they can do to this poor character to make him any more abused or miserable.
Could you imagine if Derek had been in the hotel for Hotel California?
He would be dead.
He would be so dead. I'm just gonna put that out there. So yeah, the way that they dealt with that was really awful. And then, like, I'm kind of annoyed actually about the fact that they bothered to have him create a pack at all when they basically destroyed his entire pack, you know, at the end of the season. So you're like, what was even the point of those characters? There was none, you know. Here, let's further Derek's man pain a little bit more by having him, you know, have to kill one of them. That'll be good.
And the way that happened was so...
Oh, it was the dumbest.
I don't understand.
It reminds me of... the comic that made me stop reading Marvel comics. I was a really big fan of X-Men back in the day, and I'm still a fan of some of the characters, but there's a particular arc, and the writer, Mark Millar, who is the literal worst, decided that he was going to do something that nobody else would dare to do, and that something was to kill off the only canonical gay character that they had via, like, the stupidest means ever. I don't know how familiar you are with the X-Men, but there's a character whose power is to, like, phase through things. Mm-hmm. And so Wolverine has been mind-controlled, and he's about to attack her, and she phases out of the way, and Wolverine, you know, is diving at her, whatever, and hits Jean-Paul, who's the gay character, with his claws, because this girl is phased out of the way. She's immaterial. Which is stupid for a number of reasons, not the least of which is that Jean-Paul's power is super speed. You know, to me, it was like on that level, where you're like, this is such a setup. It's a really obvious setup. It's a really stupid idiot. Like, if you wanted this character to be killed, you could have done it in a way that actually had meaning. Or, you know, that furthered the plot, or anything else.
The problem with Boyd is that we don't know anything about him, because the show never let us know anything about him. Like, he was constantly sidelined, and actually in one of Gav's reviews, she talks about how when the kids are in school, you always see these kids in classes together, and but you never see Boyd, and he hardly has any speaking lines.
No.
And it was like really obvious that they didn't really consider him an important character. And so to kill him off that way, where his death becomes meaningless, except for how it hurts Derek,
which
is really shitty. And also, how does that count as him killing one of his betas when he's forced to do it?
And the same way that him being forced to bite Gerard, I don't know.
Basically, I don't understand the Alpha Pack at all. I don't understand why any of those werewolves were following Deucalion in the first place.
Nope.
It doesn't even, like, one of the most frustrating parts of the show was when we found out that Jennifer was Kalee's emissary.
Mm-hmm.
And that Kalee, like, left her there.
Right.
Without checking to see if she was completely dead or whatever. That was a really interesting thread, and I would have really liked to see that explored. But of course they didn't, and we still don't know. Even though we got that whole scene with her doing it, we still don't understand why she did it. And that's really frustrating. If you want to break the rules of writing, that's fine. But, like, you can't leave your viewers without any idea of character motivation. They're subtle, and then there's no fucking clue.
Yeah.
They just throw on words on the page to get an episode filmed. It's like, the more money the worse they get. What is going on? Can they go back to, like, a negative $200 million budget or something?
But mo money, mo problems, nay. That's what's happening.
That's awful.
Yeah.
And I'm really angry that out of all the characters, and this has been covered by Bantam, like, everybody's talked about this, and I agree with them, that it's really shitty that Deucalion survives and is healed, but Kalee and Jennifer both die. They killed off two female characters, but, like, the white guy got his eyes healed, and he gets to live. And obviously, I know that Derek and Scott weren't going to kill him, because that's not the kind of characters they are.
Yeah.
But still. Couldn't somebody have come along and, like, with a saw? Jesus Christ. I was so... I don't know. I ended that episode. I'm like, you're just letting him leave?
Yeah.
Like, it's just like, well, they're tucking a white dude villain in their pocket for later, in case they need him.
Yeah. Which, I don't know. Like, I'm not... I don't have a problem with the fact that we have a bunch of white dude villains, you know, like...
Well, obviously not.
Yeah, I agree that... well, no, I don't agree. I'm glad that Jennifer's dead.
Well, because they massacred her character from the very beginning.
Yeah, she was an awful character. She was an awful person.
I really liked her as a teacher. I wish she could have stayed a teacher.
Right? That would have been better.
You know who should have been the bad guy? Harris.
That would have been really good, actually.
Do we even know what happened to him?
Jennifer killed him.
Good job. I forgot what happened to him.
Yeah,
but I'm glad.
Pretty sure Jennifer killed him.
But he should have been the bad guy. That would have been way more interesting.
That would have been really funny, yeah. I have mixed feelings because I agree that it sucks that the white guy got healed and survived. But I also don't think that I don't like it when people are, like, precious about characters. Like, oh, it's a female character, we can't kill her, you know? And I mean, I know that that's whatever in terms of culture. It doesn't make sense because the scales are so skewed anyway. But just, like, for my own personal preference on that, you know, where I'm like, if I count up the white guys that we've killed, I think there's still a pretty fair balance of white guys that have been killed versus...
You should make a graph.
I should. Maybe. I could be wrong, though, and then I'd be sad. Because, I don't know. It's hard because I don't like excusing that kind of thing. But I also...
mostly my issue with it is that, I mean, I understand why Jennifer killed Khalid because that was just really shitty behavior. You know, Alpha Twin A and B got hauled off to Deaton to get healed, and they, even though they're the ones that killed Boyd, and they don't deserve any redemption at all.
No.
So why doesn't Khalid deserve the same kind of redemption? Like, why does she deserve to die while they get saved?
Yeah.
And that was, I think,
no, it
was the comparison between those two, because I guess it was wrong to say it was just Deucalion surviving. But it's also the fact that Aiden and Ethan survived, where Khalid didn't.
Well, maybe she didn't.
Well, we don't know yet. You're not convinced that she's dead.
I'm not. She literally only got slashed up with glass. Like, that's not even a fatal wound for a werewolf. If you can get shot... and live through it. She
but
was
that
not
would
like
be that's like that thing again, assuming that Teen Wolf writers have any subtlety at
no,
whatsoever.
They don't. I know. No, and that's like that's it's hard because they like balancing whatever what the show has done overall, like for, you know, saving the white guys versus like my personal distaste for particular characters, you know, regardless of their gender. You know, like I wish Gerard was dead. Oh, I wish Gerard was dead. Yeah, no, now that I think about it, that's four white guys, for counting the twins as two, that they've not actually killed. I agree, the show is definitely tipping its hand in that direction of, like, maybe let's fucking stop it. But I also didn't really want any of those characters to live, so I have mixed feelings.
The Alpha Pack storyline, I just wanted to go away from the very beginning.
It's true. It was pretty...
It was just garbage. It was just, like, really...
Stupid.
It felt really rushed and not considered. It could have been a really interesting idea.
Yeah.
But it just
well,
feels
and
like it just evolved.
It also... Where they, like, just, like, throw in this super OP, you know, villain, quote-unquote, group of villains that you're like, nobody's prepared to handle this. Like, we're all gonna die. And I liked that they kind of threw in... Jennifer to be like, haha, the alphas are not really what you have to worry about. There's other stuff going on. You know, like, I liked that element of it. But, yeah, it was not well considered. And they, it's my main complaint with a lot of the Teen Wolf storylines, which is that they could have just made it, go on a little longer before showing all their cards. You know?
That would require, serious forethought.
Like, if they wanted to have Jennifer's story wrap up in whatever season 3.1, then they could have done that and had the Alpha Pack thing go on until season 3.2.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's my biggest problem with this split seasons or whatever, is that they bolted everything up so nicely. It's like the season has ended, even though the season's not over yet. If you have another arc, you have to leave something to pull people into the next, and the only reason I'm going to the next is because I'm really invested in Scott and his dad, and also Styles and his dad, and basically everybody and their parents.
Yeah.
That's really what I'm going for. And I'm not sure that that's what they want. Or maybe it is, and if so, good job. Good job, writers.
Could be. It's hard, because, like I said, the show is very problematic, and I will never deny that. It does not get things right all the time, and in fact often gets them very, very wrong. But it's still incredibly enjoyable to watch. I don't know. Like, it's not even enjoyable to watch.
No,
I get so angry. Like, I get so angry.
Like, after the episodes are over, we're like, well, what was the rating for that one? And you're like, -40,000.
Right.
You're just so upset about it.
I get really mad about things.
It's like the one episode that I watched, and we finished it, and I just sat there with my face in my hands and just squealed.
Yeah.
Screeched in agony. So upset.
That's how Teen Wolf is, though.
Yeah, you have to go into it with, like, if you're not slamming into your hands with the end, you're probably not going to like the show.
So, like, I don't really know what I keep coming back to it for, because there must be something about the characterization or some little thing that's, like, deep enough to keep pulling you in.
For me, it's definitely the parents.
Yeah. Versus the, like, really superficial plot elements. And I think that's what it is. Like, the plot is very superficial. And so it's really easy to ignore in favor of the, like, interesting character moments. And they do have a lot of them.
Isaac and Scott in Melissa's bedroom protecting her as they doze.
Mm-hmm. No, that was, you know, there's just, like, some really great moments like that. Or after The Girl Who Knew Too Much, when Jennifer comes to, like, plead her case to Derek. But Scott and Stiles have already told him what's up, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Just those kinds of things. You can just sort of see these threads. And it's, like, maybe because of how, like, hastily slapped together the rest of it is, they're, you know, like, that's the strongest part. And so you're like, oh, I can fill in these details, you know, like, really well in my mind. And I guess that's what it is, like... Teen Wolf is definitely a show where I'm very attached to the fan works.
No, definitely. If this show did not have a fandom, I would not be in it, probably.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
I would be like, well, I don't think so.
Some parts of the fandom I can't handle. Like, I don't really... Obviously, I'm good at talking about meta stuff, but I don't like usually reading other people's thoughts because I tend to disagree with them.
Every time I send it to you, you're like, stop it. Don't give me that link. Take it back, Renee. I don't want to look at that. Stop. And I just keep pushing it on you until you read it, and then you get infuriated for an hour. Because I'm the best friend. I'm the best friend that you've ever had.
It's just revenge for me getting you into the series to start with, I understand.
Jesus Christ, the series. It's just, well, I don't know. It is definitely one of my favorite shows. It's tied with Supernatural right now because both of them make me miserable and sad.
Yeah. Well, and I guess that's what I really like about the fandom, too, for Teen Wolf. No matter how miserable and sad the show makes you, you can go on to the archive and be like, here's, like, 500,000 words of pure, ridiculous fluff, and it will make you feel better. And it does.
It works out really great. Although I am pretty excited to continue the show. I am excited about the fandom, because now I get to catch up with everything. But at the end of the last episode where Allison was like, maybe it's time for you to teach me everything. And I was just are you about to become Buffy? Because I am 300% more interested in this show now. That's great.
Yeah. It's hard. I think because for every place that Teen Wolf fails really badly, it also has an equivalent place where it succeeds really, really strongly. You know, for every... bit of
terrible character death.
Well, yeah, you know, or say where every bit of erasing that they did of Boyd, there's Scott and his mom, there's Dr. Deaton and his sister, you know, Ms. Morell, you know, so it's, there's Danny who gets, you know,
a boyfriend.
Yeah, like there's a whole scene where they make out. Like how many other shows do you get that really good, like, gay romance as a side story?
Oh god, you know, like, but at the concert where he, like, straightens, like, unbuttons his I'm sorry, that was so adorable.
No, and that whole, you know, in The Girl Who Knew Too Much, when he's telling Danny, if anything happens, you just come find me first, you know, and so despite what a arguably terrible person Alpha Twin A is, you know, he legitimately has feelings for Danny, and their relationship is something that was real and good, and, you know, it's obviously, well, not obviously, but it's probably going to still continue into the next half of the season. And so for me, like, why I keep going back to Teen Wolf despite the things that it does wrong, despite them bringing back all the white guy villains, you know, and things like that, is because it does have those bits of, you know, strength in it, and you know, the really great mentorship that Dr. Deaton has with Scott, you know, and the really great familial relationships and the really great friendships, and you know, so it does a lot of things right, even if the writing is crap, and even if occasionally, often it fails, you know. So like it does enough things right that I want to find out where it's going still, and I'm interested in seeing what new ways it's going to succeed in where other genre shows, you know, really don't. So.
Oh God, we're both going to be there in January, like weeping as they open a new.
I hope I don't get. I managed. Actually, I've been really successful at avoiding most of the spoilers.
I haven't avoided all of them. I know about some new characters.
Yeah, but like
I haven't like run into the horrible stuff. Dear Tumblr, tag your shit.
Right, I would. Hopefully I can go into it mostly unspoiled, because I feel like when I get spoiled for something, especially something as emotionally draining as Teen Wolf, it makes me a lot less excited about it because I've already gotten fandom's reaction.
Yeah.
And fandom's reaction is very rarely my reaction, because I have
You're
a lot
so
of...
ornery, Rose.
I'm very ornery. That's kind of funny. Teen Wolf is one of the few fandoms that I actually ship the popular fandom pairing. And
it doesn't work out for you at all. I'm so sorry.
We were joking a few weeks ago about how the only reason that they do that is because we were into Teen Wolf before it was cool, before the fandom got really big. So I can be a hipster about it, and it it works out in that way for me.
I love the show. 10 out of 10. Except for the diversity and some of the terrible choices they make, which is where they get a 5 out of 10.
It's hard because like I said, honestly a 3. You know, honestly, Teen Wolf is a 3.
Pain level 15 and or 47, depending on if you empathize with me or Rose more.
But you know, like it's always going to be something that I recommend to people, even with all of its flaws. And it's always going to be a fandom that I legitimately enjoy, and I enjoy the works of, and I'm excited to see more of the works of, and to participate more in the works of.
The works of. I'm excited to attempt to get the Motel California on the Hugo ballot.
Yeah.
Which will never work.
Let's talk about the Hugos. I'm really excited about this. There are so many good shows that are not Doctor Who,
right,
that should
or
be
Game
on
of Thrones that should be on these ballots. Yeah, I agree. I'm constantly really frustrated.
I think that we can start a grassroots movement. I think we should contact the actors and be like, we really want you guys to win a Hugo, so let's talk about being in the Hugos.
I'm not contacting the actors. Oh my God, do you want to give me a nervous breakdown? How about you do all that? Do not contact the actors.
I'm gonna go on Twitter right now.
Do not.
I'm not actually gonna do it. Jesus, calm down.
Prod my fourth wall complex. It's very serious. I will have a breakdown, and then we'll have to.
But legitimately, I think that there are episodes in Teen Wolf that are well written enough to deserve to be in the running for the Hugos.
Okay,
you know?
Listen, if the snowman, Doctor Who, the snowman, deserves to be on that ballot, then at least 2 episodes from the season of Teen Wolf deserve to be on that ballot.
If not more.
Because, I mean, okay, the writing on Teen Wolf is bad, and some of the characterization is not so great, but seriously, the snowman, really? Really?
Yeah.
Really? Hugo voters? Okay. So we all love Teen Wolf, but you're not behind on the fandom. I'm behind on the fandom a lot because I haven't been reading anything. So I guess we're going to start with recommendations with a disclaimer that I'm like a year and a half behind.
All
right. So you can go first.
My first recommendation is actually the video that got me hooked on Teen Wolf And it's just a collection of Styles clips from season one. And I was like, what the hell is this? and mostly just like being really entertained by Styles wondering if he was attractive to gay guys. Like that was really one of the funniest things. Styles's questionable, potentially fluid sexuality is really great for me. I started watching the show because I saw that and it was on Netflix and it was great.
The rest is history.
And I've regretted it ever since. And then my next rec is another video, and it was again back from the very first start of season one, and it's set to a, you know, little Red Riding Hood song, and it's Styles and Derek and just, you know, all their fun tension and moments. Some of the editing is a little spotty for me, but I just really, like, it was, again, it was one of those things that, like, defined my introduction to the fandom. It just, like, it has kind of, like, a nostalgia place for me in my heart. And, I don't know, there's not really, like, a lot of good Teen Wolf videos that I know of, just in general. Do you remember when I decided I needed to find out if there were any Styles Derek vids to Call Me Maybe?
Oh God, yes.
That was a super great idea. I have a lot of those.
There need to be more Teen Wolf vids. I don't know. I guess it's a really big vidding fandom, or else I don't know where to find the vids. If anybody knows where to find Teen Wolf vids, we would totally appreciate a link to them.
That would be great. That would be really great, because I love vids, and I want to learn how to vid, but I've not ever had the patience to sit down and do it. Like, I know a lot about video editing, but not a lot about making vids. My next rec is a fic, again, from the Halcyon Days, season one. It's called The Sanctuary by Chase a Cow. And it's one of those, like, alpha, beta, omega fics. And it was really well done in, like, an era where it was impossible to find fics that were both long and quality and that weren't, like, super skeevy. I mean, there's obviously consent concerns in any fic that deals with people going into heat or whatever, but, you know, it was like, the best of a bad lot, I would say. But it holds up. Like, I've read it again recently, and it's still, like I said, really nostalgic, and, you know, Styles and Derek and sort of an alternate universe fun place where they get to make out a lot. And it was really good for me. And then my next recommendation is, this one is, in fact, a fic that Nay wrote.
Oh, God.
It's called Open the Door, and it was the fic that I basically conned her into writing.
That's true. That's a true story.
After we watched season one, and she wrote it for me, and it was great.
6 days.
I'm still really impressed that you wrote 25,000 words in 6 days. And it was for a long time, it's one of the most popular fics in the fandom, and totally freaked Nay out, and she refused to even engage with writing fic for Teen Wolf after that.
Thank you, whoever knocked me down. I appreciate that.
There's like four or five now that are above you.
Thank you. I hope everybody enjoys those. My pick has been Josh. Can it just go away?
Yeah. But again, any fic that was written for me, I'm obviously going to be particularly fond of, and fics where Derek and Styles are not as subtle as they think they are, I also really enjoy. And yeah, it's just, you know, subtle romance and very sweet and lots of feelings, and that's what I like in my fanfic. And then my last rec, it's by Dira Sudis, and it's called The Boy and the Beast. And she calls it Beauty and the Beast story, but it's really, if anybody knows the East of the Sun, West of the Moon fairy tale, it's more in that vein, where Derek is stuck as a wolf and lives as Styles' dog for a little while. For some reason, that particular trope, I've read a couple of fics, there's not a ton of them, but I really, really enjoy it because it gives Derek a place to sort of indulge in affection that he wouldn't be comfortable receiving otherwise, I think. You know, Derek is, he's like a prickly little cactus werewolf. Having him sort of trapped as a dog, where he's like, oh, people are going to pet me and be affectionate with me and we're going to cuddle and it's really good for me. That's it. That's that's all there is to it.
That is not shameful at all.
I'm not ashamed. I have literally no shame about what I love in Teen Wolf. There's a lot of really tropey garbage that I'm really, really fond of. So anyway, those are all things that I have loved and do love, and everybody should check them out.
I'm really behind. I'm really behind. I don't know how else to say it. I've been busy. I've been doing like OTW crap and working, and I'm just behind.
Mm-hmm.
And also, people can blame you because listen, there's Grimm and there's Sentinel that we're watching now. Mm-hmm. I have things to do.
I know, I'm excited. I'm really, can I just say that I'm most excited about writing a Teen Wolf Sentinel crossover that actually obeys Sentinel canon.
And by writing it, she means subconning me into writing it.
No, I'm writing it. I've already started.
I know what's going to happen there, though. You're going to be like, Renee, you finished your show. Guess what? I know what's going to go down.
I mean, you can write one, too. I'm not going to stop that.
Okay, well, I have four. We can't go there. We can't go down that dark path. I have four wrecks. The first is A Strong Heart and A Nervous Teal. It's an AU where Styles and Derek wake up married in Vegas, and Styles is the president's son. The sheriff is actually the president. It's super adorable. And I have no shame that I love like stupid wake up married fics. They are the best.
They are, and that one's really good, too.
Every fandom needs to have at least five. So if there's more out there, someone needs to be like, listen, here you go, Renee. To hear all the Wake Up Married things for Derek and Stella that there are on AO3 or on Tumblr or anywhere. I'll take them. It's really cute. Derek takes Styles back to meet his family, and there's a lot of emotions and feelings and makeouts. And it's really good for me, and there's a lot of Derek being happy, which... Listen, a lot of my fics were about Derek becoming happy because the show is not nice to Derek, as we've established. My second rec is By Any Other Name by Entangled Now. And the best way I know to describe this story is to actually quote from it. We've been hunting witches with severe memory loss. I'm a werewolf and you're 17. I think we messed up a while back. Because it's like a niche effect where they have a spell cast on them and they lose their memories and they just keep... They don't know who they are or who each other are, but they keep working together. And it's really long, and it ends really great with lots of Derek feelings. It's going to be a trend. I love Derek feelings.
I'm so glad you wrecked that fic, because it's really great.
It's a really good story. The third is We've Written Volumes in Blood and Scars and Ink by Not the Quiet Type. So Styles gets injured, and basically the whole fic is rotation of Styles getting injured and Derek coming around and using his alpha powers to take away pain and turn Styles into, as the fic calls it, a werewolf addict. And there's a lot of awesome, really awesome banter, and I'm really weak to any story that has Styles being like a smartass and joking around. That's my favorite Styles. And my fourth is actually nonfiction, and it is Hello Taylor's Teen Wolf Recaps. Gav recaps every episode with images and lots of really funny commentary. I will not lie, I've spent, when I caught up on the show and went to catch up on her recaps, I fell off my couch and was laughing so hard at some of these reviews, because she's just so funny. I obviously don't always agree with her, but she's got a really interesting perspective, and she's seen a lot of other media, which I haven't done. I don't watch a lot of television, so she sees things and patterns that I don't, so it's been really interesting to follow along with somebody who knows more about television.
I'm really proud of the fact that I'm pretty sure I wrecked all those fics to you.
Congratulations. So that was just Rose's secondary wreck section, guys.
No, I'm just glad that you like all the fics that I like is actually what I was trying to say there. Because it makes me incredibly happy when I get to share things that I love and other people are like, oh, that was so good too. And I was like, yes.
And I know you wrecked me the surfing fic. And then another. Yes. You keep wrecking me these like fics over 90,000 words, and I'm
it's
like,
it's really bad. I have there's like 3 or 4 fics in Teen Wolf fandom that are like 100,000+ words.
When am I gonna get to this?
So good. I don't know. Put it on your thing and read it while you're walking.
And fall over and die. You have a lot of confidence in my ability to walk and like concentrate on something else at the same time.
Well, maybe try a treadmill.
Okay, fine. That's a fair compromise. We'll do that.
Okay, good.
And we'll be back, because now I'm going to spend the next 6 months like writing a fic that I've promised people.
Excited. Oh, I'm so excited.
God, I can't believe I agreed to this. It's awful.
That's okay. And I've got promises to keep, too. Maybe by the time next season starts, we'll have completed some of those promises.
And before this new season starts, we're going to come back and like have an entire episode where we just break fic at each other.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to have to spend the next 6 months catching up, because apparently the fandom exploded while I was away.
It's a very large fandom these days. It's pretty intense.
I know, it's really scary. I don't know what to do with large fandoms. I'll be over here in my corner.
Right. Alright, well, thanks for talking with Teen Wolf, Tamine.
You're welcome. Thanks for not insulting the entire fandom.
I was really restrained. I'm kind of proud of myself.
No, I am too. I give you a gold star.
I'm glad that we got the shouting out before we started recording, is maybe all I have to say about that.
So thanks everybody for listening, and we'll see you next time. Bye!
Have a good one. Of you.
I'm glad that you're proud of me. It makes me good.
Do you want me to see if I can make that sound more condescending?
No,
I probably could.
You probably could, but I think I'm good at that level right there. 66% condescending.
66%. Yeah.